Welkom, strijders voor onze vrijheid en onze rechten. Dit is de Jensen Roadshow 2024. Zonder jullie financiële steun hadden we dit nooit kunnen doen. Steun ons als je dit waardeert. Ga naar jensen.nl.
Praag. Wat een prachtige stad. Overal adembenemende gebouwen. Het is denk ik voor mij een goede plek om een gevoel te krijgen van het oostelijk deel van Europa. Er is hier in de recente geschiedenis zoveel veranderd. Hoe krijg ik nou een gevoel bij wat hier speelt? Gewoon praten met mensen is altijd het beste. Maar het eerste wat me opvalt is, waar is de lokale bevolking? Ik zie alleen maar toeristen om me heen. Heel, heel veel toeristen.
Ik ben in Praag, in Tsjechië, de Czech Republic. En ik zal je vertellen dat een soort van blinde vlek voor mij is Oost-Europa. West-Europa, Zuid-Europa, ik begrijp er een hoop van en ik zie een hoop herkenning. En ik denk dat dat natuurlijk is als je uit Nederland komt. Maar Oost-Europa is zoiets, daar zijn we zo over misleid en het is zo ingewikkeld en het lijkt zo anders allemaal. En het is ook anders. De geschiedenis is zo intens. Er is zoveel gebeurd hier. Alles zoals het nu is en zoals het misschien lijkt, is natuurlijk niet hoe dit ooit ontstaan is. Het gaat zoveel eeuwen terug. Culturen, tradities en dat soort dingen. En je weet, daar ben ik naar op zoek. Blijft dat stand? Houdt dat zich staande in deze globalistische wereld? En in het oosten is een blinde vlek, dus ik moet echt onderzoeken. En we beginnen hier in Praag. En wat je eigenlijk meteen merkt, is dat Praag is, het is zo'n mooie stad. Het is zo prachtig. Het is echt, ja, ik gebruik het woord zelden, maar beeldschoon. Maar om hier te starten, om te kijken wat de Tsjechische cultuur is, is een lastige. En dat is voornamelijk omdat het land natuurlijk nog eigenlijk niet zo lang bestaat in de huidige vorm. Het heeft zoveel vormen gehad. De cultuur, de historie is zoveel groter, zoveel jaren geleden. Ongelooflijk wat het hier heeft meegemaakt. Maar zelfs de afgelopen 100 jaar hebben zoveel veranderingen gebracht. Maar ook zelfs de afgelopen 30 jaar. Met het natuurlijk dat Slowakije niet meer bij Tsjechoslowakije hoorde. De Tsjechië en Slowakije, dat ze uit elkaar zijn gegaan. En dat is pas de laatste 30, 35 jaar gebeurd. En om hier met de lokale bevolking te praten, ik heb ook wel wat gesprekken gehad. Het is lastig om erachter te komen hoe het nou allemaal precies zit. Maar voor mij is deze trip naar het oosten, Oost-Europa, is een soort van startpunt. En ik weet, ik zeg het altijd omdat je maar heel kort een plek aandoet. Het is aan de ene kant oppervlakkig, maar aan de andere kant weet ik ook wel veel. En je voelt dingen aan. En als je intuïtief bent en een bepaalde sensitiviteit hebt, dan voel je dingen wel aan. Maar ik weet gewoon hier, alles wat hier speelt, is veel dieper dan hoe het lijkt. En als je oppervlakkig kijkt, en daarom struggle ik ook een beetje om hier mensen aan te spreken. Want Praag is totaal overgenomen door toerisme. Nou ben ik geen snob. Nou zeg ik niet dat mensen niet mogen genieten en leuke dingen mogen doen en op reis moeten gaan. Ik ben de allerlaatste natuurlijk die dat zegt, want ik ben voor vrijheid. Maar het is wel ongelooflijk hoe toeristisch het hier is. Het is een mensenmassa, geen lokale bevolking. Ik kan me niet indenken, wat het me verteld is dat het gewoon ook het hele jaar doorgaat. Het is niet zo dat dit alleen maar in augustus is, zoals nu. Het hele jaar gaat het zo door. En ja, je ziet natuurlijk de meest belachelijke, on-Tsjechische dingen. Zoals, ik zit dan naast zo'n klok en dat is een hele mooie klok. Dat is een hele oude klok. Maar er staan dus de hele, op het hele uur, er staan daar heel veel mensen omheen. En als die klok begint te slaan, dan gaan die mensen klappen. Toeristen, niet de lokale bevolking natuurlijk. Ik denk dat die mensen knijtergek geworden zijn. Het probleem voor mij is natuurlijk dat ik een aantal plekken ga bezoeken en je wil gewoon snel een goede indruk krijgen. Hier in het centrum van Praag, hoe mooi het ook is, het is prachtig. Maar met deze mensenmassa van toerisme, en het is niet te doen. Dus we moeten met iemand gaan praten die weet wat hier echt speelt. En die weet wat hier echt aan de gang is. En die een hele belangrijke rol gespeeld heeft de afgelopen 30 jaar.
Ik ben onderweg voor een gesprek met iemand die verantwoordelijk is voor veel van de recente ontwikkelingen in Tsjechië. Václav Klaus was 5 jaar lang de laatste premier van Tsjechoslowakije en van 2003 tot 2013 president van Tsjechië. Ik ben niet zo geïnteresseerd in politici voor deze serie, maar Klaus is anders. Als president was hij zeer politiek incorrect en bijzonder hard over de ontwikkeling van de EU. Ook sprak hij zich fel uit tegen de climate change beweging en noemde het een hoax. Prachtig. Hij werd geboren in het nazi-tijdperk en groeide op onder het communisme. Er lijkt me geen betere man om te spreken over het Tsjechië van toen en nu.
Mr. President, thanks for inviting me here to your institute and thanks for taking time out to speak with me.
Thank you for coming here.
The first thing I notice is I think you must be one of the most decorated people to ever live. If I see all the awards. And
I have many. Many awards, doctorate degrees, doctorate things. But you need such an institute because otherwise you wouldn't have been able to have it at home. this is one experience.
Institute was created to hang up the awards and the decorations.
Yeah.
Well, so I am doing a road trip around Europe to find out how individual countries hold up against the onslaught of globalism and, of course, the power-grabbing EU, to see if countries keep their traditions and the culture and what regular people on the street, how they feel about their country, if there's still pride. It differs a lot from country to country I've been to. So now I'm in the Czech Republic, and obviously you get quite a superficial impression. But here it's even more complicated because so much has happened in the past, well, about 100 years but even the past 30 years, so much has changed. So I thought, why not speak to somebody who was prime minister for 5 years and president for 10 years? But let me start off with this. I find this fascinating and difficult to grasp. Of course, I grew up with Czechoslovakia, and there was a separation.
I was born in Czechoslovakia, of course, and even my wife was born in Slovakia, so my wife is theoretically Slovak, who spent most of her life here in Prague, which means her Czech is better than her Slovak these days, but the split of the country was something which I experienced at home, you know.
Yeah.
Not just as a politician who was responsible for organizing the split. So I think it helped both nations to divide the country. The Czechs didn't need it, but the Slovaks wanted to be, for the first time in history, bosses of their own country. They didn't want to spend another 100 years under Budapest or Prague or Vienna or So they really wanted it. And my decision as prime minister at the time was, when they want it, okay, let's do it. Yeah, I didn't try to block it.
And it happened quite organically. It was not orchestrated or.
It happened organically, and I am afraid that the Spanish people in the last, let's say, not now, but 10 years ago, 20 years ago, invited to speak in Catalonia, in Barcelona. What about my experience with dividing the country? And of course, I enjoyed going there and making such speeches, but the point was, I was always telling them, you invited a wrong person. I was in a position of Madrid, not of Barcelona. Because the Czechs didn't need to divide the country. The Slovaks wanted it. So the Slovaks are more typical, more representative for something like Catalonia. But I was different than the Spanish government. I said, okay, then we will not fight, we will not send armies, we will not imprison anyone.
You could have used your power to do that, but you chose to keep an open mind and go with what they wanted.
I think the Slovaks needed it, and it helped them, really, I must.
Because the interesting thing is, I met quite a few Slovaks last night, and talking to them, and I mean, culturally, there's a lot of similarities, and even the language. And
there are really many similarities, and especially when in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, TV was something where one report was made in Czech, one report in English, in a Slovak language. So the people were used to understand each other quite easily, and we were not. I love mountains, and we were never allowed to go to the Alps. So for us, the Tatra Mountains in Slovakia was the way how to spend the summer holidays plus some skiing. So we were connected deeply. Nevertheless, there are differences, and the history is different, and people don't fully understand that Czechoslovakia was artificially created after the First World War in 1918, artificially created, and not everyone was happy with it. So I've slowly understood that the Slovaks have a right to say, hello, we don't want to have a bigger brother in Prague who tells us what is wrong and what is not wrong.
So let's talk about the big brothers of the world. You, during your presidency, you've been very Eurosceptic, you could say, and you've been very, you expressed yourself very forcefully, and I really enjoy reading and everything you said about it, because I agree with you. I mean, you are pro-Europe in the sense of cooperating together, but not creating this super state, the EU. And you were a lone wolf at the time, being president of the Czech Republic. And you said some really strong things, like in the speech in front of the European Community Commission, you said that it reminds you of a modern Politburo, and you compared Brussels with Moscow, and I mean, you went even further than that.
You know, they hated me in Brussels all the time, and I must say that the opposite is true as well. You know, I don't intend to go to Brussels, and I have no motivation to do anything of that kind. By the way, Brussels was the first foreign Western city I visited in my life. I was 100 years ago almost, when I still was internationally playing basketball, and My first trip was to Luxembourg and Belgium to play several matches there. So Brussels was my first My first city, foreign big city, I had a chance to visit, but it was before the ugly buildings of the EU were built there, so it was still a nice but now traditional city. Now
you wouldn't go back.
No, and when I was there last time, the invitation, the Flemish, one of Flemish party published, translated my book about migration into Flemish, and I was there at the official presenting the book, and I was invited to say something on Belgium TV. I have never experienced such a negative approach abroad in my 35 years of traveling all over the world and speaking. They hated me, the Belgian TV people.
Because the only thing they want to hear is, oh, the EU, it is a paradise, it is a hallelujah.
You know, we are oversensitive in this respect, because the Czechs spent three centuries under the Habsburgs, under Vienna, then we some several years under German Nazi system, and then 40 years under Moscow. So we are not just sensitive to these issues, we are oversensitive, and we are really strongly against what is going on in Europe these days. You know, I, as an economist, I was very much in favor of opening up of the best possible cooperation among European countries, but I don't want to have a Madame von der Leyen dictating us what to do. So this is my and my institute very clear position.
But the EEC, that idea was not bad, you know, cooperating together, but that actually was just tiptoeing towards where we are now, and how bad is it going to get? But to get back to you, you grew up in communism in that period, and you've drawn parallels in a way that, you know, basically this country gave up its sovereignty to Moscow, and you had no power, and that was horrible, horrible feeling, very, very, very dark. So then you got your independence, and now they've given it to the EU, and every country has done that. It's actually frightening, isn't it?
It's frightening, and at the very beginning, I always refused. I used to be an academician who doesn't trivialize issues. So at the very beginning, I almost blocked or protested against simple and cheap comparisons between Moscow and Brussels, between the EU mechanism and what was going on in the communist world. You know, now I must say that I cease to block it, cease to oppose it. In many respects, there are so many similarities between what we used to have in the communist era and what we experience now. You know, I, just to be quite explicit, I don't compare today's EU regime with the early communism in Soviet Union in the Stalin era or in Czechoslovakia in the 1950s, but to compare the EU today with the late communism, I think it's appropriate, and in many respects there are so many similarities that everyone who has open eyes must see them.
Yeah, I see it, even though I never lived under communism, of course, fortunately.
You lost a lot.
Yeah, so much.
We lost years of and many, you know. Can you imagine that I, from my age 28 to 48, I was not allowed to go to the West. you can't imagine anyone from the Netherlands can't achieve anything like that. You know? Nevertheless, we lost a lot, but at the same time, we learned a lot, we experienced a lot. For us, the debate about freedom and unfreedom is not a theoretical debate. It's a personal experience. So we have a different way of looking at things, which is one of our comparative advantages,
of course. And I notice that when I'm in the Eastern countries, I think people are very much more clear-eyed about this, much more than in the West, where, and I especially saw it during the COVID period, and people don't appreciate freedom, and it's actually a fight to keep it. But people are just, they just expect it. They just expect it to always be there. Even if it's taken away from them, they still think they're free.
Yeah, the people in the West take freedom as given.
Yes.
Given, which is definitely not true.
No.
And there is less and less freedom every day in the EU these days. And the Westerners criticize it, but don't fully feel or understand the structural changes which have been done in the last couple of years and decades.
Yeah. So the EU train has left the station. So, you know, it's on its way and it's on its destination. And in my opinion, the dystopian destination. And well, the thing is, but the comparison to communism, I've heard you say it, it's communism just basically sort of filled. It got to its end. It got weak. And it had almost a natural death. Am I quoting you correctly? Along similar lines, you said something like that. And is that possible with the goals of the EU or the EU project? Could that also, you know, before it reaches its destination or its...
No, first, I don't fully like the comparison very often used, or that the train has left the station and we don't know where it goes. You know, this is something I don't accept. I'm afraid that many things were built in the original idea of the European integration process. You know. And I feel it, and I felt it always as a danger, always, you know. And so I don't think that that the departure of the train was okay, you know. I know that it's impossible to say in the EU that the founding fathers were wrong. I am absolutely sure that they were absolutely wrong, you know. And so the train started in a wrong direction. So I think we felt it for a very long time.
Yeah.
But the EU at the beginning looked like from the across the borders, you know, it looked like an economic integration which opens up, makes the free movement of people, goods, services, people, capital moving. Well, it looked positive even from here, but I think it has changed very rapidly into something else.
And on the deeper level, structurally, it's been thought out very well and executed very well. I mean, when I speak to people in any country in Europe, if they hold a referendum, most people would go against it.
I am not sure.
Not anymore?
I am not sure. This is I would call a wishful thinking.
Yeah.
You know, I am afraid that the propaganda of the EU, of the beauty of the EU, is so strong in all the European countries that in a even in a free, really free referendum, unsuppressed referendum, majority of people would say, let's go on. They are afraid that that they could lose more than they can get. So This is my feeling, you know. There is a strong criticism of individual events in the EU. Nevertheless, I think that for the majority of the people, it's still a blessing, you know. I am pessimistic in this respect, you know. You started your interview with saying that I am a skeptic or something you mentioned.
Euroskeptic.
Euroskeptic, I refuse that term.
Yeah.
I am not an euroskeptic, I am not an euro-naivist.
No. You know?
that's a slight difference.
Better. So what's the ultimate goal of the EU project, or are they already there? Have they achieved it?
No, the EU project is to... It's very similar to all the leftist isms, all the leftist ideologies, to suppress freedom and to put another goal as a target of how to organize human society. So I consider the EU as a post-democratic society with everything what it means.
Yeah. It's, once again, quite frightening. So the Czech Republic today, is it holding on to its traditions? Is it strong culturally? Do people still have a sense of pride in the Czech Republic? Or is it too young, really, to...
No, I think that, to my great regret, we had excellent 1990s. Everything was rosy, and we were visibly going up. The first decade of this century was so-so, but in the last decade we are moving blindly into the EU straitjacket, and the political parties lost any meaning, and we enter the post-political world of today, and we don't have a... I think what we need normally is a pluralistic parliamentary democracy based on ideologically well-defined political parties, which is not the case. Even I think in your country you have parties for something or against something. This is not the traditional political party. So I see it as a problem, and to my great regret, even I founded the first political party on the right of the political spectrum here on this territory, and we three times or four times succeeded in winning the elections. But it's over now, and the party which still has the same name, ODS, Civic Democratic Party, belongs to Madame von der Leyen's world, and I don't feel any connection with that party, to my great regret.
And the people of the Czech Republic, I mean, the communism has is now, for a lot of people, long, long in the past, but...
Well, the communism is considered crazy and impossible. Yeah. That's another...
Do they still realize how bad it was?
Yeah. Well, the new generations don't understand it fully. Nevertheless, when I look at... Let's put it in this way. My sons, who are 50, 55, they understand it fully. Mm. As I do, I would say. I have 10 grandchildren, you know. It's incredible from two sons to have, this is very un-European these days.
Yes, yes, nowadays.
And then the grandchildren are from 27 to 3 months, you know. And so the older grandchildren try to orient in that, but I am not sure how to guarantee the understanding for the younger younger grandchildren. This is already, in my opinion, lost. And people always, somebody ask me, why are you so skeptical? You must remember that communism fell, and overnight you didn't expect it. And in that case, I always say, you must take the time perspective, horizon into the thinking. And I always shock the people on TV and in the discussions. And, okay, communism fell, and I don't think that we will have Madame von der Leyen's EU in the year 2326, probably not. You know. But let's put it into the time horizon. And I ask, do you think that, as you know, the end of communism was 1989, and therefore, do you think that we are in the year 1987, or are we in the year 1978, or 66, 61, 51? And the people start listening to that, and I am afraid that the people in Europe are, as regards the program of the European integration with all what it means, they are still in the 1950s or 60s as compared to communism destiny. So optimism is in German, optimism is Pflicht. Yeah,
yeah, duty.
But you must put the time dimension into it.
Yeah, and look at things with clear eyes and an open mind and be critical. Another big change in, I think, the Czech Republic is that population of about 10 million. And recently, is it true that the 500 Ukrainian refugees came to the Czech Republic?
500,000.
500,000, yeah, 500,000. Did I say 500?
Yeah.
500,000.
We are number one in the world.
What does that
per
change?
Capita.
Yeah.
Per capita. Four times bigger Poland has more. Yeah. Ukrainians, but not four times more.
Not four.
So we are number one. Tragic, tragic.
How do you tragic?
You know, I am totally against mass migration. Totally. I even in 2000 after 2015, I wrote a book about that. Which was published in, I think, six or eight European languages as well. And I think that I stress that it's normal not to migrate. It's normal to stay at home. It's normal to go abroad for holidays or for when you like skiing, go to the Alps. Okay, but for a visit, for a short time, you may go for studying and so on. But it's not normal to migrate. This is my strong statement, and I accuse the European politicians, not just Angela Merkel, for inviting the migrants to come here. So I always shock the West European audiences when I say the fact that the migrants are here, the migrants are not responsible for that, the European politicians are responsible. So in this respect, I have very strong and aggressive views.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I don't blame the migrants for coming.
Definitely.
But it's just, but I also have the sense that everybody is much more happy in the place where they were born, where they know their culture, where they're from. But if there's an invitation to come to another country, and especially when the country you're from is being destroyed economically or by bad forces, evil forces in the world,
yeah,
who try to divide us and who try to steal things, then you cannot blame these people for coming. but you can blame other people who are creating that problem.
Definitely.
This is a separate issue, but Prague is such a beautiful city. And
Prague is not bad.
Oh, come on, it's beautiful. And we're a little bit on the outskirts, but it's beautiful here too. Just amazing. So I understand that people love to come here, but walking the street when I arrived last night in the old town in Prague, and it was 11:30 in the evening, and the amount of people, the amount of tourists who were on the street, and I'm not a snob, I'm not saying people shouldn't go to tourist destinations or can enjoy all that, but I was walking across the bridge, and it was like a wave of people coming over me. It was Bombay, in a way. It's incredible, the amount of tourists. Is that a problem for Prague?
Well, I think it is a problem. The one thing is tourism, and another thing is the migration, and that's those are two different things for us when we had a chance to come to Amsterdam in the past. We were shocked how many foreigners are there permanently. I am afraid that Prague is moving into the same direction. Now more than 10% of the people in Prague are foreigners, you know, which is approaching West European standards. So it will be difficult for a small country to survive, not to lose its identity, and I am afraid of it.
Any optimistic message to end? Not that we need it. I mean, I'd rather be realistic about things. And
optimism is important, but naivism is wrong, and that difference is.
And I think that is the real pandemic of people in the West is that they're being naive. That is a pandemic of
naivism with many illusions. Yeah, that's the problem.
We need to be clear about it and call it for what it is, and that's the best way forward.
I'm glad that there are people in Western Europe who are so clear as you are.
We don't give up. President Klaus, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Václav Klaus, zijn woorden zijn bij me blijven hangen en ik denk er veel aan. Het is toch altijd weer die EU met hun lust voor controle die de grootste aanval is op de individuele culturen van een land. Alles moet hetzelfde worden. En als klein land als Tsjechië, hoe houd je je staande? Zeker met 500.000 Oekraïense migranten die er plotseling zijn. Zijn er nog lokale mensen die hun mond durven open te trekken? Ik zie ze niet. Ik zie alleen maar toeristen. Maar ik zie ook nog de prachtige stad. En dat straalt nog wel de rijke cultuur uit van deze wonderlijke plek. Kijk nog even met me mee.
Jaar.
Dames en heren, daar zijn we weer. In een nieuwe setting, maar met dezelfde boodschap en vrijheid.
Compleet onafhankelijk.
Dit is de enige plek waar je de echte vrijheid en waar uiteindelijk het echte nieuws te vinden is.
Al 5 jaar op zoek naar de waarheid.
Nooit als er zoiets groots gebeurt, als je voelt dat iets groots op je afkomt. Niet dat eerste narratief.
Ja, dat zeg je heel vaak.
Ik zeg dat niet dat eerste narratief. Wacht even af en probeer in het nu te blijven leven. En probeer daar te blijven staan.
Al 5 jaar op het scherpst van de snede.
Your children, folks, if you've let them, have been injected with a molecule. And I've got worse for you, but for which they had so little safety data, you would probably not allow a pet of yours to be injected.
Al 5 jaar verzet tegen het kwaad.
Ze hebben dezelfde vijand en ze spelen ons tegen elkaar uit. Als mensen dat gaan zien, het game over voor die gasten.
Al 5 jaar met de rug kaarsrecht.
Ik geloof nog steeds dat onze beste tijden nog voor ons liggen.
Al 5 jaar met een lach.
Ik stop even mijn speech terug in mijn Ik haat Klaus Schwab tasje.
En al 5 jaar strijdend voor onze vrijheid en onze rechten. We hebben financiële support nodig om onafhankelijk door te gaan. Steun ons voor de vrijheid van het vrije woord. Ga naar jensen.nl. Het vrije geluid laat zich niet censureren.